I call this meeting of the MSU Board of Trustees to order. Is there a motion to approve the agenda?
So moved.
Is there a second?
Second.
Any discussion? All those in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? The agenda is approved. Is there a motion to approve the April 21, 2023 meeting minutes?
So moved.
Is there a second?
Second.
Any discussion? All those in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? The minutes are approved. We now move to the President's Report. Good morning.
Good morning.
Grand Rapids and all of the state of Michigan, and welcome to today's board meeting, which we are broadcasting to you from Grand Rapids. It's really wonderful, and I speak for everyone on the dais for the warm welcome that's been extended to all of us to Grand Rapids for this annual board retreat and meeting. So today in my board report, I'd like to focus on three topics: how the university engages in this and other communities, our progress towards our strategic objectives and safety activities on campus, and additions to our university family. So one of the things I've been doing is thinking a great deal about placemaking. The Grand Rapids community is an extraordinary community and is an example of investing in itself, and one in which Michigan State has made a pronounced difference to over the past dozen years since we opened this gorgeous Secchia Center. We see it spectacularly across this Grand Rapids skyline, and we can see what we have accomplished with our community partners, and it's been truly inspirational. Opening this building is the home of the College of Human Medicine, and then building out our Grand Rapids Innovation Park with our Grand Rapids Research Center, the Doug Meyer Medical Innovation Building, and the North American Headquarters for Perrigo. These developments do much to enhance the area's healthcare and its economy. The direct annual economic activity from just these four buildings was calculated in a 2021 study to be $203 million, with broader annual economic impact of $339 million, and annual support for 2,017 local jobs. We see more examples of MSU's placemaking and engagement throughout the Grand Rapids area. One of these that comes to mind is MSU's Extension's Grand Ideas Garden on Ball Avenue, where guests can draw inspiration as well as helpful knowledge for their own gardens. At John Ball Zoo, the Kellogg Biological Station's Haddad Lab is conserving an endangered native butterfly, at the moment raising more in captivity than exist in the wild. This partnership is so successful, they are now working to conserve a second endangered species. We see our placemaking at area farm markets, schools, and hospitals, where extension educators connect food managers with local growers. Kent County is a national leader in growing apples, and our extension specialists support growers and farmers with timely research-based information to enhance their yields as well as profitability. And with the support of our partners at the Steelcase Foundation, Extension's Mental Health First Aid Program is being offered to 10th graders in Kentwood, Wyoming, and Grand Rapids schools. Speaking of powerful partnerships, our West Michigan Spartans Club is one of our biggest and most philanthropic clubs, volunteering locally and supporting several scholarships at MSU. We count some 18,400 Spartan alums in Kent County alone. And we're proud to enroll 3,600 students from the Kent, Ottawa, Allegan, Muskegon County region, and last month saluted 533 of them at our graduation ceremonies. And I want to give a shout out to Trustee Scott for her leadership in West Michigan. Thank you very, very much. So I want to give you a little bit of an update on our strategic plan. Students and employees, as all of you know, are at the heart of MSU. Spartans, together with MSU's placemaking and community engagement, are also the focus of our 2030 strategic plan. We're pleased to present the board recently with our second annual strategic plan update, which highlights our progress as a community in fostering a university environment in which all students and employees can grow and thrive, and communities in which everyone is lifted up. On that note, we observe our 10th anniversary of preparing leaders and change-making makers through our LGBTQ academic minor in the College of Arts and Letters. And I want to wish everyone a joyful Pride Month. A big part of supporting student success is our continued expansion of undergraduate advising resources, particularly for the critical first 2 years of the university experience. Those include programs fostering belonging for first-generation students, and in addition to the 15 advisory staff members hired in the past year, we'll be adding 20 more by fall under our advising initiative led by Provost Yitzko. We are improving the graduate experience, too, through means such as the University Fellowship Program led by Dean Pero Dagbovi. That program focuses on recruiting and retaining a more diverse body of students while increasing the number of participants by 25% by 2028. And we're strengthening our overall academic excellence at MSU. You might have seen, for example, that 4 MSU graduate degree programs were recently ranked number 1 in the country by U.S. News and World Report. Those are curriculum and instruction, elementary education and secondary education in the College of Education, and supply chain management in the Broad College of Business. For employees, we are creating an environment allowing all of us to do our best work, individually as well as collectively. Encouraging and recognizing faculty and staff achievement is a key part of that. Last month, I enjoyed congratulating the winners of the 46th annual Jack Breslin Distinguished Staff Awards and the Ruth Jamison Above and Beyond Award. We also gathered to celebrate 753 dedicated employees reaching employment milestone, along with retirees at our annual Service and Retirement Recognition Awards. 2 of our employees have served our university for a remarkable and sprightly 55 years. I had the pleasure last month as well of joining our annual MSU Awards convocation to honor outstanding faculty and academic staff for their research, teaching, and outreach. I want to add my congratulations to the 10 new University Distinguished Professor honorees being confirmed today. And congratulations, too, to the 65 faculty members whose promotions are included in today's personnel report. In the spirit of recognizing faculty excellence, I want to take this opportunity to welcome microbial ecologist James Teagle into the American Academy of Arts and Sciences. For more than 50 years, his research and mentoring have made a mark on the field of microbial science. And in that same vein, I want to give a shout-out to College of Law Dean Linda Green. Next month, she will participate in the Higher Education Resources Services, or HERS, Leadership Institute. This important program is for those who are ready to usher their universities into a more inclusive and equitable future. And I look forward to hearing more about her experiences there. Innovation for Global Impact is another key strategic theme. And the plan sets a goal for $1 billion in annual research expenditures by 2030. We took a big step in that direction last year, growing our research to a record $759.2 million. Vice President Gage was about to leap up and take over the microphone. Knowing how important our cherry production is to Michigan, and particularly in the Grand Traverse region, I'm proud to know Spartan scientists who have now sequenced the tart cherry genome. This will make it possible to breed varieties better suited to our changing climate change, and we at MSU could not be more proud of this outcome. Meanwhile, we're working to ensure our facilities keep pace with our aspirations, most recently leveraging state support to upgrade our dairy and greenhouse research and teaching facilities on campus and breaking ground on our new multicultural center. Our work toward our strategic sustainability goals is reflected in our recent rise in impact rankings to number 2 in the United States by Times Higher Education. Thank you, Executive Vice President Wu. And reflecting our strategic DEI and sustainability health goal, we grew our number of students of color across our 3 human healthcare colleges by more than 10%. Thank you, EVPHS Norm Beauchamp. Speaking of our rankings, and to illustrate MSU's commitment to improving the lives of people wherever they live, It was great to see the university ranked number 6 by the Peace Corps in its list of top volunteer-producing colleges and universities. We're very proud of the university's global engagement efforts and our students' work in this regard. As we look forward to the strategic plan's endpoint of 2030, MSU will be 175 years in the making. Our strategic vision today adds to our foundation of excellence as we gaze even further ahead to make our next 175 years just as transformative as the first. Certainly, safety and security are prerequisites for any placemaking, and always at the forefront as we enable a safe and welcoming campus. In recent weeks, we have continued to strengthen our campus alert system to include outdoor emergency weather sirens and our campus green light emergency phones, along with many other actions. Our facilities crews continues to install hundreds of new classroom door locks. Those can be locked from the inside while letting emergency personnel enter using a key. Our independent third-party after-action review is underway. Meanwhile, as we work to open our campus security operations center, integrate our security systems, and develop procedures for real-time monitoring. Another important component of our work to ensure a safe and supportive university will be in place shortly with our selection of a new vice president for civil rights and Title IX education and compliance following a rigorous national search. Laura Ruggles is an Army veteran who is most recently Title IX Associate Vice President at Cornell University. She will join us July 1, pending board approval, and I look forward to her perspective on preventing and responding to discrimination and sexual violence and misconduct. Later this morning, I am also looking forward to recommending the appointment of two college leaders. First, we are recommending Teresa Mastin, the chairperson of the Department of Advertising and Public Relations, to be interim dean of the College of Communication, Arts, and Science. I'd like to formally thank Dean Prabhu David for his leadership of the college and look forward to his future development. Additionally, the board will be asked to confirm the appointment of a new dean for the College of Social Science, something we just announced yesterday. We are pleased to recommend Brent Donnellan, the college's Associate Dean of Academic and Student Affairs and Professor of Psychology for that leadership role. I also want to express my gratitude to Dean Mary Finn, who has served the college so incredibly well since March of 2020. Finally, we have a new head coach for our rowing program to welcome back to the banks of the Red Cedar River. Stacy Ripito was head coach at Boston University and worked as a Division I assistant and recruiter coordinate as well as at Rhode Island over the last two decades. At MSU, she was honored as Regional Assistant Coach of the Year in 2007, so we want to welcome back our coach. As the strategic plan underscores, our people are absolutely essential to the success of the university, a fact that has been recognized in the budget before and the board today, and is before the board today for approval. This budget responsibly advances our strategic priority of creating a best-in-class workplace while supporting the success of every student we admit and advancing our tripartite mission of education, research, and outreach. I want to thank the board for your support for these institutional priorities, and particularly for prioritizing compensation as a key hallmark of this budget as we continue together to advance excellence of Michigan State University. Before I conclude, I want to note Tuesday's exciting announcement of the latest MSU investment in a community of great importance. Investment by your endowment fund in the iconic Fisher Building demonstrates the sincerity of our commitment to the city of Detroit. This comes on the heels of an endowment investment in the Paquette Flats Affordable Housing and Adaptive Reuse Project, which, with our plans for a joint research facility in Detroit, stems from our 30-year partnership with the Henry Ford Health System. Later today, MSU hosts a community celebration of Juneteenth back on the campus at Breslin Center, so there'll be a lot of cars heading that direction soon after this meeting. I want to commend Vice President and Chief Diversity Officer Jabbar Bennett and all those producing this year's event. I look forward to being there this afternoon and encourage everyone to join us as we live our commitment to making a place that is safe, warm, and welcoming for all. This concludes my report of just the work of the last 2 months. And now I'd like to return to our next agenda item, which is public participation on items germane to the agenda. Let me turn it to Board Chair Stefan Fletcher.
Thank you, Interim President Woodruff. We'll now proceed to the public participation on items germane to the agenda portion of the meeting. Each individual who signed up to speak will have 3 minutes to address the board. Your time will end when the buzzer sounds. We will now hear from Joe Garza, followed by Kayla Williams. Joe, are you with us?
Good morning, everyone. Can everyone hear me? All right. So I have some words, and I'm going to go off script a little bit. So, and I'm going to use the full 3 minutes, Stefan, just so you know. You never give up the mic. But my name is Joe Garza. I am the president of the Administrative Professional Supervisors Association, representing 1,300 members. And I serve as the chair of the Coalition of Labor Organizations. I've addressed this board, Interim President Woodruff, and met with university executive leadership over the past year to discuss additional compensation for support staff. I've also had other union leaders meet with many of you, and we've had this conversation regarding compensation. And as President Woodruff said in her State of the University speech, compensation was a priority. I know our members are really anticipating what the Board of Trustees and the President are going to do. We understand the process of the budget and how this work session was for the budget for the 23-24 year. So we are looking for the board to support the sacrifices, acknowledge the sacrifices we have made, and as President Woodruff said, focus on the MSU strategic plan of 2030, which outlines investing in staff and faculty success. So the one thing, again, going off script, I would like to acknowledge a few people here. I'd like to acknowledge Christina Brogdon and Melissa Wu, who have been through this whole process with us in conversations with the union leadership. President Woodruff, we've met with you several times, and you know that's paramount with us. And I'd like to really recognize Karen Kelly Blake here. One thing that as support staff, we never really worked that closely with the Faculty Senate. And over the course of the last few years with COVID, with the tragedy that happened, we've had a lot of communication, and I'm really going to miss working with you, but I'm looking forward to working with Jack. So I guess in essence of that, we've all evolved. Again, we've gone into different, boldly go where no one has gone before, and to say that we would have worked with the faculty and engaged with the Board of Trustees, we're looking forward to continuing that process. So I just wanted to thank everyone for the time, for seeing me. Maybe I don't have to say my name is Joe Garza next time I address you. But thank you very much, and we anticipate hearing good news. So thank you very much. Thank you, Karen. Yep.
Our next speaker will be Kayla Williams, followed by Mike Baylor. Good morning, Kayla.
Hello. For those of you who don't know me, I've been to a couple of these now. My name is Kayla Williams, 2010 chemical engineering graduate, and also had the pleasure of diving for Michigan State for 4 years. I'm glad to be back in my hometown today. Make it back a couple times a year, typically as a coach these days for whether it's regional diving or more recently the girls' state meet last year. Not a bad two-hour drive unless you get stuck in some snow and ice, which happened in November. So not ideal. But that said, I see on the agenda today we are discussing the potential to authorize and proceed with the Health and Wellness Center. I'm very excited to see that in that document it does mention the addition of a 50-meter recreational pool. I am optimistic that that will remain in scope and potentially be passed today, and that was part of what excited me the most about coming up today to check in with you all. So at this point, I just want to say, so the last time I was here, we had requested some clarity around timelines and potential next steps. I am here representing the Battle for Spartan Swim and Dive. We're about 3.5 years into our advocacy, attempting to hopefully bring these programs back to Michigan State, because I believe there's a lot of value here, not only for the university, but for all the constituents in the state of Michigan who, by and large, seem to favor swim and dive more than many other states in the U.S. If you haven't seen the All-American data I've got on swimming and diving, let me know. I've got it available. So that said, I'm pleased to share that since then we've been able to have some meaningful dialogue with the administration and advancement. We are optimistic that if this facility becomes a reality, that's one less barrier to us potentially being able to bring these programs back. So with that, I will end my remarks and hope that that vote goes through. So go green.
Taylor, thank you very much. Our next speaker will be Mike Balow.
Good morning to everyone. It's good to be here. There's never a bad day to come to Grand Rapids, I'll tell you that much. I have to say, this is the first time I've been germane to the agenda, so it feels like my favorite TV show of the 80s was The Jeffersons. I'm moving on up here. Some people have come to call, you know, I've been here often enough, or my friends over a beer have called me the ninth trustee. I said, I don't know whether to laugh or cry at that, but I know, you know, the eighth was almost a possibility. We'll see about that in 24, but it's good to be here today because I'd like to echo Kayla's comments. We're hopeful that MSU is about to take a step into the future for its campus. You know, it's been way too long that a campus of 50,000 students in the B1G has rec facilities that are substandard. We're getting ready to take a big step. A big part of that is aquatics. It needs no reminding with 10,000 high school swimmers and divers and the importance of all the users of the pool at Michigan State that this is just a big thing that needs to happen. You know, and I will say that this is the enabling factor, right? Like, there's two parts to this for me. One is it's the right thing to do for the campus at large. Two, it's the right thing to do for amateur athletics. You know, if I go back to October of 2020, it was the only stated reason for eliminating the historic U of M swim and dive programs that it was the facilities, and there was no hope for a 50-meter pool an hour in the future. We're now getting ready to walk through a door together where we have a chance to do something truly great here. And if we look around at the other things MSU has done in Detroit and in Grand Rapids, and if you look at the numbers that were just published 3 days ago in the USA Today about the biggest athletic departments in the country, you can Google it, USA Today, biggest athletic departments. MSU clocks in at number 12 out of, you know, 65 Power 5 schools in the country, ahead of all but three teams in the Big Ten, I think, ahead of the bulk of the SEC, and, you know, things are looking good for MSU athletics. So the partnership of athletics, our donor base, the university itself can do this right. I'd like to mention, and I'm going to have to speed up here, we saw the dark side of the U of M MSU rivalry last fall, which went both ways with a lot of blame on both sides. U of M coach Mike Bottom has pledged his support to help get our program going again. We have a pool that's going to be similar to the UVA national champions. We have a transfer portal filled with 450 first-class athletes that would, many of whom would love to come to MSU. And, you know, I would like to say in closing that I'm just proud of all of our athletes. My own daughter, Sophia, is listening to this down in Tennessee. She loves MSU. I just couldn't be prouder of her and her athletes who have fought so hard for this. Look, it's too late for her. It's too late for our family. But this is the right thing to do for MSU for the next 50 years. So I urge you to enable this. And I'll close by saying, for God's sake, if the PGA and the LIV Tour can bury the hatchet and move forward, so can MSU in any capacity it so chooses. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Mike. Interim President Woodruff, that concludes public comment on items that are germane to the agenda.
Thank you, Board Secretary Fletcher. I'd like to now call upon Vice President for Research and Innovation, Doug Gage, to present the gift, grant, and contract report.
Good morning. Chairperson Vassar, members of the Board of Trustees, I request approval of the awards found in the gift, grant, and contract report. The report period is March 23, 2023 through May 24, 2023. The total value for this period is $122,511,190.
Is there a motion to approve the gift, grant, and contract report? Is there a second? Any discussion? All those in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? The gift, grant, and contract report is approved. I now call upon Vice President for Research and Innovation, Doug Gage, to present the research presentation.
Thank you. As many of you know, this is one of my favorite parts of the board meeting, which is to really to highlight our outstanding faculty. And today I think we have an individual who really exemplifies all the things we want in our faculty. And you'll see he is both a basic scientist who does community-based research and is equally involved in diversifying our graduate student population. He's the whole package. So today's speaker is Irving Vega. He is a Red Cedar faculty member recently appointed and associate professor in the Department of Translational Neuroscience in the College of Human Medicine at Michigan State University. He also serves as the director of the Integrated Mass Spectrometry Unit in the College of Human Medicine and as a program director in the NIH-funded Endure Bridge to the PhD program. You heard me talk about training grants yesterday. This is a perfect example. And here he mentors and hosts undergraduate students from underrepresented groups and encourages them to advance toward a PhD in neuroscience. And we've had great success with that. Dr. Vega obtained his undergraduate degree in biology from the University of Puerto Rico Mayagüez campus. He continued his research training in the Department of Cell Biology and Neuroscience at Rutgers University, where he earned his PhD. Irving completed his postdoctoral fellowship in neuroscience at the Mayo Clinic in Jacksonville, where he developed his research career focusing on the pathobiology of Alzheimer's disease. Additionally, Irving has been participating in the Academic Leadership Fellows Program over the past year, where he's been assigned to me to work as a really a, it's a leadership development program, which I think is one of the most important things we can do, which is to really find the next generation of leaders for MSU. And Irving is a great example of that. At MSU, Irving's research focuses on the molecular and biochemical mechanisms that modulate and accumulate the pathological tau proteins in Alzheimer's disease and related dementia. But he also works on health disparities and is very engaged in the community in Grand Rapids to really engage the community in basic science research. And that's no easy task, and Irving will tell you about that. He's looking at the influences of ethno-racial factors on blood biomarkers and Alzheimer's disease, and I think you'll be very pleased to hear about his work. So, Irving?
Thank you, Dr. Gage, for that introduction and your unconditional mentorship and sponsorship. I wanted to start acknowledging Melanie Coffin for the feedback and the IT staff for the support putting this presentation together. President Woodruff, more members of the Board of Trustees, good morning. Thank you for the opportunity to give you a brief overview. We don't have 2 hours, so a brief overview about my research. A principle, I believe, for the scientific endeavor is actually to take knowledge and use it and share it with the community so that we can benefit them and get better health outcomes and empower them for social justice. And using that knowledge in that powerful way, especially taking care of the most vulnerable in our population, it should be what the scientific endeavor should be all about. And that's actually how the Alzheimer's research started. Back in 1901, a patient was brought to a clinic, a psychiatric clinic in Munich, Germany. And that patient was Auguste Dieter. And it was taken care by Dr. Alois Alzheimer, who actually carefully followed her clinical presentation until her death in 1906, where he studied her brain and found two pathological hallmarks that all today we're still trying to figure out what they do. One is outside of the neurons that he called plaques. And this aggregate is form of, now we know it's form of a peptide of about 40, 42 amino acids. He also found an aggregate of protein inside the neurons and important cells in the brain that he called a bundle of fibers. And today we refer to it as neurofibrillary tangles. And we know that that bundle of fibers is formed of a protein known as tau. The tau protein actually accumulates in specific brain regions in Alzheimer's disease. And the spread of this pathological form of this protein follows the clinical presentation of individuals when it starts in a brain region associated with learning and memory and spread from that region to other ones affecting behavior until it goes to the areas that erase completely, the pathology erase completely the memory of these individuals, robbing of the dignity of those that live with this terrible disease. So our interest, because of tau, is not only present as a pathological hallmark in Alzheimer's disease, but in other neurodegenerative diseases, has been to, one, try to understand the pathobiology associated with this aggregation of the protein tau. But also we have been interested in understand the health disparities associated with Alzheimer's disease. In terms of the pathological process, we have been interested in identify and characterize proteins that change their abundance and change postalational modification, changes in the way they are modified in the brain during the course of the disease. And we have used for that a technique called mass spectrometry. And I have been using this technique of mass spectrometry to collaborate with different scientists, from identifying the proteins responsible for the barnacles to stick to boats, and the proteins involved in the regeneration of the sea cucumber gut to human disease. That expertise allowed me also to establish a fee-for-service facility here in the Grand Rapids Research Center called the Integrated Mass Spectrometry Unit, or like we like to call it, IMSU, pun intended. And this fee-for-service facility has been able to be in operation thanks to the support of the College of Human Medicine Dean, Dr. Aaron Sousa, and the support of the chair of the Department of Intellectual Neuroscience, Dr. Jack Lipton, who actually, their support allowed us in almost 5 years to contribute, to be in operation and contribute directly to 9 published articles, 1 patent, help to capture over $4.6 million in extramural research funding. And also, we generate, despite of the COVID-19 that almost shut down us completely, generate an average close to $90,000 in income directly because of the services that we provide to the community. That's only on research without counting the service that we provide by providing workshops to graduate students, undergraduate students, postdocs, and even faculty. I use this technology to, as I mentioned before, to identify changes in proteins associated with the course of the disease, both in animal models and also in post-mortem tissue in Alzheimer's disease. This is one example of the papers that we have published where this protein has been shown that we show that the level of the protein decreases as the disease progresses. And we also did many other studies where we identify that there are antibodies in patients with this disease that goes against this protein. So there is a connection between the level of the protein in the brain and circulating antibodies against this protein. We also were the first one to identify a novel protein called EFHD2. Associated with the pathological form of tau, and we have demonstrated that this protein modulates the aggregation of the protein tau. Our graduate students have been actually working in both, trying to understand the physiological role of this protein, but also, importantly so, the pathological role that this EFHD2 protein works. This research is important. However, while we are doing this research, currently, there are about 6.6 million people living with Alzheimer's disease in the United States. And this doesn't account for around 30% of people that go underdiagnosed and undiagnosed every year. We expected that by 2025, the percentage of people living with Alzheimer's disease will increase between 10 to 30%, depending on the state that you are in. Here in Michigan, it's expected to increase by 15%, the number of people living with Alzheimer's disease from 2020 to 2025. And 2025 is just one and a half years from now. So that increase in the amount of individuals living with Alzheimer's disease is unfortunately disproportionately affecting people based on their sex and their race and ethnicity. We know that women blacks, African Americans, Hispanics, Latinos, are higher risk of developing Alzheimer's disease and related dementias than whites. And to study that and to try to find out what are the contextual factors that contribute to that disparity is one of our efforts. I just want to give you an example of a recent work that we did, looking at what are trying to identify and looking at what actually are the components that contribute to that disparity in terms of cognitive function between Latinos and non-Latinos whites. And in this study, we found that U.S.-born Latinos at baseline, this is cognitive function at baseline, they perform worse than Latinos that migrated to the United States when they were younger than 18 years of age, between the age of 18 and 34, and older than 35. And actually, those Latinos that migrated after, age in this group of ages, they performed equally or slightly better than non-Latinos white. However, the U.S.-born Latinos really performed poorly in the cognitive function, regardless of the domain of cognition that we tested, memory, processing, any of the other, other cognitive functions that we measure. So this actually indicates that it's not just to be Latinos. It's actually there are other factors that are go through the lifespan that contribute to this disparity among people in our community. While we are in the lab looking at these biomarkers and this pathological process and try to find the next cure for Alzheimer's disease, as a scientist, we usually tend to don't look at all the other factors that contribute to affect the biology that lead to that outcome. And that is equally important as understanding how those molecules aggregate together. And that's actually what has been our work, because I call not looking at these factors like the environmental factors, the sociocultural factors, the behavioral factors that incide in the biology of the individuals. I call that not looking at it. I look at as my term or the term that I use to refer to it is the vicious cycles of inequality. We need to incorporate these factors in our studies, especially because there are things that we can do. We know that representation in the healthcare system and in research is important for people to get access to it. This is data from the Alzheimer Association, where they illustrate how important it is for individuals to have people that understand their race and ethnicity, their cultural values. Why that is important? Because they are also the ones more at risk of discrimination when they try to assess to get access to healthcare system. As you can see here, the Hispanics, Black Americans, Asian Americans, and Native Americans are more prone to face that discrimination, and usually because they don't see the representation or they don't have representation in the healthcare system, but I will argue that also in research. So what we do for that, we go into the community through a P30 Center grant that funds the Michigan Center for Contextual Factors in Alzheimer's Disease. We go to the community for two goals. One, to bring awareness about risk factors associated with Alzheimer's disease, and also to provide information on health practices or healthy practices for your brain. And we do that in very different ways. We do it completely virtually, especially during the COVID-19 pandemic. We do hybrid. We have people connected. We know that even after the COVID-19 pandemic, in order to be inclusive, that Zoom thing stay with us forever. And we also do it fully in person. One aspect that the community likes is when I bring real human brain specimens, and they can actually touch it and actually can see what is happening. I see your faces, and I know that some of them do the same face like that, but they're lining up, putting gloves to try to touch it and try to look at it in different ways. And you can see the sparkle, how that knowledge that was given to them go from short-term memory to long-term memory just because of that experience. We bring actually our brain zoo that has brains from salamanders to raccoons to mice to mouse to rats to sheep, monkey, and the kids can actually see how the brain evolves through these species. This is actually a truck and tree event in a school in Grand Rapids. And we were just, you know, we were the cool place because we have brains in there, you know. But it's also an opportunity for service learning. I bring medical students that are bilingual, and we instituted a medical Spanish within an English as a second language course with one of our partners' organizations, the Roosevelt Park Ministry. And in that, the medical students can go and introduce terminology that you can use in a visit to a physician in Spanish and then the translation in English. And it helps the community. The community loves that, especially because it's coming from medical students. But the medical student can practice terminology in Spanish, number one. And number two, they can practice bedside manners by interacting and getting that empathy with the individuals, understanding the barrier that language possesses. So that activity is actually aligned to bring awareness, but also about the risk factor, but also about clinical research. We developed a research volunteer directory that today, even though people said that it's very difficult to recruit Latinos to research, in that directory, in the past 5 years, we have over 500 Latinos adults in that directory that have helped us to leverage, to bring to town, to Grand Rapids, a longitudinal study to follow cognition of Latinos here in Grand Rapids, which is going to be done in a different way, not in a fancy building associated with a medical school like this one in Sequia. We're going to do it inside the community with community partners, with a community clinic. And the knowledge and the training we're going to provide is going to stay there beyond the grant and beyond anything that we do scientifically. In addition to increased diversity in research, as Dr. Gage mentioned, I'm the proud director of the Bridges to the PhD in Neuroscience program. And I said that because there's no more fun than being around students that are passionate about and curious about what they want to do. And we bring 12 students last summer, and this summer we currently have 12 students. And for you guys to know that half of them are in East Lansing and half of them are here in Grand Rapids. And we partnered with Grand Valley State University, and we are using their dorms, in that way opening the whole spectrum of research available at MSU to these inspiring neuroscientists. And last year, we have, out of the 12, we have 6 racing seniors. From these racing seniors, I'm happy to report that Priscilla Coriano was accepted in here at MSU in the biomolecular science PhD program, and she wants to pursue a neuroscience research. We also have Stephanie and Janilis that were accepted in Puerto Rico in the Ponce Health Sciences System, University. Janilis in the PhD in clinical psychology, and Stephanie in the Department of Neuroscience. And Stephanie was actually awarded a fellowship to a T32 grant for the next 3 years, and she won Best Award in a Natural and Conference for the poster that she presented based on the research that she did here in Grand Rapids. Jesus Rosario, another racing senior last summer, now is an ND-PhD student at University of Cincinnati Medical School. And Natanya Dennis, who was the first one, a student that we were able to recruit from North Carolina Central University, was made history in that university, being the first student ever from North Carolina Central University be accepted at Yale University in the Department of Neuroscience. So we are very proud of these students. The 6, these are 5, I know I say 6. The number 6 is actually doing a gap year here in MSU in East Lansing under the mentorship of Dr. A.J. Robinson. And we don't know, we're going to follow her until she goes to a PhD in neuroscience. With that is what I have to say today. I will address any questions you may have.
Thank you so much for inhabiting the ethos of the land-grant professor and certainly as our inaugural Red Cedar Distinguished Faculty Member. Are there questions or comments from the board?
Thank you.
We are so proud of you and your efforts, and let us know.
Yes, chairperson Vassar. I was just trying to make sure everyone else got there. Thank you so much for this research. I just super appreciate when research that seems like, you know, at the very beginning I'm like, oh, gonna have to do a glossary, right? But when you come from this high level into the community, this is the research that we really want to see. And it does fit the land grant mission, but it also fits the human condition, right? And so I just appreciate your work being participatory in that way. Thank you, Dr. Gage, for having him here. I did want to go back to that one slide that talked about, and this is, I think, was the most interesting part of your work, is not thinking in isolation about these issues, but how there is an ecosystem of inequality that would, and inequity that would, yes, that you called it the vicious cycle, that would contribute to the effects, the health effects that minoritized people are experiencing. And I wanted to go back to food deserts. Okay. I wanted to make sure there's one S. It's food deserts, not desserts. Because I have dessert every time that I eat. And I was like, oh, geez. So that's food deserts, which is a big deal. But then the other piece was, the other piece that I was really concerned about was the physical activity. Can you speak more to that?
Actually, we just spent a whole week analyzing data surrounding physical activity associated with cognitive function at University of Michigan in a summer data immersion. And it's where we bring people from all the country to work on a specific topic, and where this type of research come to as well, with biostatisticians, social scientists, you know, a very interdisciplinary and multidisciplinary approach. Physical activity is associated with the release, for example, of stress.
Yeah.
And how you can actually trigger these endomorphins in your system that are beneficial for your brain. And how the brain get all that release of that bad material for the brain to our sweat, and then especially to calming down the level of stress that we have during the day. Mm-hmm. And it doesn't have to be that you are training for a marathon. Right? It doesn't have to be that. Just walking every day, just standing instead of sitting, is something that you can do to actually maintain that physical activity, especially when people are 65 years or older. Although, that being said, Alzheimer's disease is not a disease of all people. Mm-hmm. It's a disease that you accumulate the risk throughout your lifespan.
Correct.
And there are people that have the pathological hallmark of Alzheimer's disease in their brain, but because they had a very good lifespan, they never have clinical presentation. Mm-hmm. And that's what we need to achieve.
Yeah. I think that's the excitement of this research, right? Because listed here is what you can individually do, but systemically what we need to interrogate in terms of the systems that we perpetuate and create that would create the conditions for someone to have their lives augmented or actually cut short. So I appreciate this more than you can ever know. And your work in the community is to be lauded.
Well, Bob, I'm going to do it. I was prepared to this question. So actually, I'm going to finish with this. Research usually try to focus on a particular problem. And all of you have seen probably this about equity. And dealing with healthcare, with health disparities is about justice, about equity and inclusion. So if we take this one that we all have seen before, we look at the problem that is defense. And we're looking at defense as the main problem. And we come out with solutions about that, because the problem, we think, is defense. So with that, we actually put those two boxes and now create a new barrier for that small kid. Have you questioned yourself how that small kid went on top of those two boxes? He made it, but it's a new barrier. So addressing the wrong problem, which actually in this case is to ask ourselves, why these three individuals are not sitting at the breaches? Why are not sitting? Why we call it equity just to resolve the problem of defense and not taking those three out there? We can do that from research to science, and I hope that we can achieve that with the help of you guys here to fulfill the mission of MSU.
Oh, thank you.
thank you so very, very much. We appreciate that. Thank you. It is now my pleasure to call upon Interim Provost Yaitsko for the exciting annual personnel actions and information reports associated with promotion and tenure. Interim Provost Yaitsko.
Thank you very much, Interim President Woodruff. Trustees, I present for approval the items on the June 2023 list of personnel actions. I present for approval the following tenured faculty appointments. Tara S. Farron, PhD, Professor, School of Human Resources and Labor Relations, with tenure, effective August 16, 2023. Angela Chiachen Chen, PhD, Professor, College of Nursing, with tenure, effective June 15, 2023. Bradley E. Cox, PhD, Associate Professor, Department of Education Administration, with tenure, effective July 1, 2023. Andrew Kerner, PhD, Associate Professor, Department of Political Science, with tenure, effective August 16, 2023. Sung-Yung Ri, PhD, Professor, Department of Biochemistry and Molecular Biology, Department of Plant Biology, and Department of Plant, Soil, and Microbial Sciences, with tenure, effective July 1, 2023. Stephen C. Wilkes, PhD, Associate Professor, College of Law, with tenure, effective August 16, 2023. Ruguo Young, PhD, Associate Professor, Department of Biomedical Engineering, with tenure, effective August 16, 2023. Amanda Coate, PhD, Associate Professor, Department of Media and Information, with tenure, effective August 16, 2023. Derek Fox, PhD, Professor, College of Music, with tenure, effective August 16, 2023. Catherine Connolly, PhD, MSU Foundation Professor, Department of Computer Science and Engineering, with tenure, effective March 20th, 2023. Joseph Darda, PhD, Associate Professor, Department of English, with tenure, effective August 16th, 2023. I'm also pleased to share the list of faculty who have been promoted as associate professors with tenure. Please turn your attention to the screen to recognize these outstanding faculty members. This is such an important achievement both for them as well as for us. It speaks to their research acumen, their stellar accomplishments, and also our future growth and security as an institution of our caliber. I'm also pleased to recommend at this point Teresa Maston, PhD, Chairperson, Department of Advertising and Public Relations, for a change in title and appointment to Interim Dean, College of Communications, Arts and Sciences, effective May 16, 2023. In addition, I'm pleased to recommend M. Brent Donnellan, PhD, Professor and Associate Dean of Academic and Student Affairs, for a change in title and appointment to Dean of the College of Social Science, effective July 1st, 2023. Finally, I'm pleased to recommend Laura Ruglas, JD, Vice President for Civil Rights and Title IX Education and Compliance, Office for Civil Rights and Title IX Education and Compliance, Executive Management, effective July 1st, 2023. Additionally, I'm pleased to present 10 outstanding scholars recently approved for the title of University Distinguished Professor. On June 9, 1889, the MSU Board of Trustees approved the establishment of the University Distinguished Professor designation. 21 faculty were approved with the designation on July 20, 1990. Since then, 142 faculty have been approved with the designation of University Distinguished Professor. From the 16 nomination cycles, a standing advisory committee reviewed nominations and recommended 10 candidates to the provost. Based on these recommendations, Interim President Woodruff and I now recommend for approval of the University Distinguished Professor designation for the 10 faculty I now list to be effective June 16, 2023. Michael Boyven, PhD, MPH, Department of Neurology and Ophthalmology, College of Osteopathic Medicine. Henry Rick Campa, PhD, Department of Fisheries and Wildlife, College of Agricultural and Natural Sciences. Rebecca Campbell, PhD, Department of Psychology in the College of Social Science. Patricia Edwards, PhD, Department of Teacher Education in the College of Education. Leonard Fleck, PhD, Department of Philosophy and the Center for Bioethics and Social Justice, College of Arts and Letters, and College of Human Medicine. Rufus Isaacs, PhD, Department of Entomology, College of Agricultural and Natural Resources. Richard Lenski, PhD, Department of Plant, Soil, and Microbial Sciences, College of Agricultural and Natural Resources, and College of Natural Science. Mary Mirage, PhD, Department of Criminal Justice in the College of Social Science. Edward Walker, PhD, Department of Microbiology and Molecular Genetics, College of Natural Science. And Felicia Wu, PhD, Department of Food Science and Human Nutrition, College of Agricultural and Natural Resources. Also included in your materials are information reports for academic personnel actions. Included in your information reports are the promotion and tenure awards that will be effective July 1, 2023. Will you call for a motion, President Woodruff?
I'd like to call for an enthusiastic motion to approve the personnel actions.
So moved.
Is there a resounding second?
Support.
Any discussion? All those in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? The personnel actions are enthusiastically approved. Thank you very much, Provost Yitzko.
Thank you, trustees and president.
I'd like to now move to our committee reports and other items that are requiring board approval. Trustee Rima Vassar will now present the Committee on Budget and Finance report.
Thank you, Dr. Woodruff. As chairperson of the Trustee Committee on Budget and Finance, I move that the Board of Trustees hereby establishes a fund functioning as an endowment entitled the College of Osteopathic Medicine Dean's Discretionary Scholarship.
Is there support?
Support.
Is there second? Any discussion? All those in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? This matter carries.
Dr. Beauchamp, do you have anything that you'd like to say?
I'm really enthusiastic about this. One of the things when you talked to our students yesterday, when they said, what can we do more to help our students? It really is student debt. And it's opportunities like this where we can take these resources and make them available to students that will help us bring in those very students that Dr. Vega talked about that will help us address health disparities. So thank you and appreciate the support.
Well, thank you. And thank you for sharing your students with us. They are awesome. As chairperson of the Trustee Committee on Budget and Finance, I move that the Board of Trustees hereby establishes a fund functioning as an endowment entitled the Mashiki Endowed Scholarship in Human Medicine.
Is there support?
Support.
Is there a second? Any discussion?
Dr. Beauchamp.
Thank you. One of the things that we talk about is the land that we occupy. And an important question is, well, how are we actually responding back with respect to those communities? And one of the ways that we can do that is to create opportunities for those children to grow up and be physicians and then to return to their communities. So it's a wonderful way that we seek to, an important way to give back. And again, appreciate your support.
Thank you for that discussion. All those in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? The matter carries.
As chairperson of the Trustee Committee on Budget and Finance, I move that the board hereby adopts the Michigan State University fiscal year 2023-2024 operating budget, including tuition and fee rates for all undergraduate students for the 2023-24 academic years and graduation tuition rates for the 2023-24 academic year. Be it further resolved that the administration is directed to implement the Michigan State University fiscal year 2023 to 2024 operating budget as presented.
Is there support?
Support.
Is there a second?
Second.
Any discussion?
Lisa Frace, are you available for discussion?
Yes, you have before you the budget material. It is listed in the online information. As has been discussed all through the morning, that we really did prioritize compensation, and we've made that statement all along, that compensation was our highest priority, and this budget does reflect that. It also does provide support for several other line items, including support for additional resources for Title IX, for additional resources for safety and security, as well as health and wellness. And so with that, I would recommend adoption of this budget.
Thank you very much. All those in favor?
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? The matter carries.
As chairperson of the Trustee Committee on Budget and Finance, I move that the board hereby authorizes the administration to plan for the title Bessie Hall HVAC Equipment Replacement.
Is there support?
Support.
Is there second? Any discussion?
Dan Bowman, are you available for comment? There he is.
Good morning. This project represents the university's continued commitment to investing in our capital renewal program for some of our critical facilities across campus. Bessie Hall is one of our primary teaching facilities, and this project will replace the HVAC system with upgraded technology that's more energy efficient and also more provides a consistent environment for teaching. Thank you.
Thank you. All those in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? This matter carries.
As chairperson of the Trustee Committee on Budget and Finance, I move that the administration is hereby authorized to plan for the project entitled Anthony Hall Envelope Renewal.
Is there support?
Support.
Is there a second?
Second.
Any discussion?
Dan Bowman, do you want to come back up?
Sure, another capital renewal project. Anthony Hall was built in 1955. It's got great bones, is worthy of the investment, and this takes care of the external envelope, roof, gutters, downspouts, things like that. It'll propel the building into the future for the next probably 50 years.
Thank you.
All those in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? This matter carries.
As chairperson of the Trustee Committee on Budget and Finance, I move that the board hereby authorizes the administration to proceed with the project entitled MSU Main Library Special Collections Renovate Third Floor and HVAC Updates. It's a long title. With a project budget of $13.8 million.
Is there support?
Support.
Is there a second?
Second.
Any discussion?
Let's see. Terry Miller available via Zoom? Terry?
Hello, can you hear me?
Yes.
All right. Sorry, I'm zooming in for Virginia, and their chime's going off in the house right now. So. This project is to make a better space for our special collections area. It will include a state-of-the-art gas suppression system for fire, which will protect our $150 million in special collections. This is a rendering that you're seeing of the view into the special collections area, which will hold the majority of this collection.
Thank you. Very good. All those in favor?
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? The matter carries.
Thank you. Mm-hmm. Okay. As chairperson of the Trustee Committee on Budget and Finance, I move that the board hereby authorizes the administration to proceed with the project entitled Student Recreation and Wellness Center with a project budget of $200 million.
Is there support?
Support.
Is there a second?
Second.
Further discussion?
Yes, I think, let me see who is available. Surprise, surprise, Vinnie Gore.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Good morning.
This project is the Student Rec in Center Wellness Center. It's located on a corner of Shaw and Harrison Road. It is updating our current fitness facilities, which range in age of 104 years old to 60 years old. It'll be 293 square feet and include a basketball, fitness center, wellness center, and also it will include an aquatics recreational pool.
Okay. All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Opposed? The matter carries.
I'm sorry. I want to abstain from this vote.
So noted.
Thank you.
The matter carries.
At the October 28, 2022 Board of Trustees meeting, the board requested the administration to develop a plan forward for a potential swim and dive team. During the past several months, administrators worked with supporters of the swim and dive program to evaluate possible scenarios. With today's approval of a recreational pool as part of the new Student Recreation and Wellness Center, a window of opportunity exists for supporters of the program who have been, pretty persistent, to raise support to fund the additional infrastructure needed for a competitive intercollegiate athletic swim and dive facility. They have been given a target and a timeline and have agreed upon that. The board, administration, and supporters of the swim and dive program are aligned to restart a swim and dive MSU program.
Thank you. I'd like to now... That concludes your report?
That concludes my report.
Very good. Let me now call upon Trustee Dennis Denno to provide the Committee on Academic Affairs report.
Thank you. As chairperson of the Trustee Committee on Academic Affairs, I move that the board hereby approves the amendments to the bylaws for academic governance included in Attachment A.
Is there support?
Support.
Is there a second?
Second.
Any discussion?
No, moving on.
Let me call for
the vote.
Yeah, the vote. So all those in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Abstained? The matter carries.
As chairperson of the Trustee Committee on Academic Affairs, I move that the board hereby amends University Ordinance 31.00 as shown in Exhibit A and hereto attached.
Is there support?
Support.
Is there a second?
Second.
Any discussion? All those in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Abstentions? The matter carries.
Committee also discussed the university's upcoming tenure accreditation review, work in the health sciences area, and governance updates. I think we were supposed to ask for VP Lynch if he wanted to talk about, or do we not supposed to? I'm kind of confused.
There could be discussion on either of those. I didn't think.
Okay, I'm sorry. This concludes my report.
Okay, either of them. Okay, very good. Committee reports, and let's see. Let me now call. Did I screw up?
No.
Okay, very good.
Who wants to talk about parking?
No offense. let's see. Trustee Dan Kelly will now present the Committee on Audit, Risk, and Compliance report.
Thank you. As chairperson of the Trustee Committee on Audit, Risk, and Compliance, I move that the board hereby approve the following. A license agreement with Adverton Biotherapeutics, an option agreement amendment with IKEA File, a license agreement with Environmental Protective Coatings, a license agreement with Great Lakes Crystal Technologies, an option agreement with Targeted Alpha Therapeutics, an option agreement with Tarn Biosciences, a sponsored research agreement with Great Lakes Crystal Technologies, two service agreements with Great Lakes Crystal Technologies, and a service agreement with Tarn Biosciences.
Fantastic. Is there support?
Support.
Is there a second?
Okay.
Any discussion?
I seriously doubt it, but Doug Gage can answer any questions.
All those in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Abstained? The matter carries. I'd now like to call upon Trustee Kelly Tebe for the Committee on Student Life and Culture.
Thank you. The Committee on Student Life and Culture discussed our student liaison policy and also had some discussions around student mental health.
Very
good. That concludes my report.
Thank you, Trustee Tebe. Now I'd like to call on Board Secretary Fletcher for the public participation and other items.
Thank you very much, Interim President Woodruff. We'll now proceed to public participation on other items sort of not germane to the agenda. Again, each individual who has signed up to speak will have 3 minutes to address the board. Your time will end when the buzzer sounds. We have one item of public participation in this section of the meeting this morning from Alec Macri via Zoom. Alec, are you with us?
Can you guys hear me?
Yes, we can.
Great. Thank you. Dear Board of Trustees, it's been 10 months since Dean Gupta was wrongfully dismissed from his role as the Dean of the Borough College of Business. It's been 9.5 months since the board hired Quinn Emanuel to do an investigation of Dean Gupta's dismissal, because even the board knew back then that the circumstances of his dismissal didn't make sense. Several Borough alumni, including myself, have tried to work with this board and administration to come to a resolution. Many of us were hopeful several times during the past 8 months that a resolution would happen, especially after the facts were reported from the Quinn Emanuel report supporting Dean Gupta's argument that he was wrongfully dismissed. However, to our frustration, we found a board that was encouraging, but an administration that was not willing to take advice or act in good faith. The Quinn Emanuel independent report provides the evidence you need to determine that Sanjay Gupta was wrongfully terminated by Interim President Woodruff. The Quinn Emanuel report specifically states the interim president did not follow university policies and procedures, and in fact, violate many of them in terminating Sanjay Gupta. The report cites inconsistent and unsupported facts that Woodruff asserted to justify her forced removal of Dean Gupta. She rewrote and made up policies to serve her own purposes. Additionally, the Quinn Emanuel report concludes that two units of the university under interim president Woodruff's leadership interfered with the investigation of the OIE, even though the OIE is to be independent. With this type of behavior by the current administration, it is not surprising that they have not afforded Dean Gupta's due process or been willing to negotiate a settlement in good faith, even though several offers from Dean Gupta's lawyer have been made to the administration. This administration behaves as if the rules don't apply to them. The Board of Trustees turned the task of negotiations over to the administration to, quote, make things right after the Quinn Emanuel report was released. That has not happened. This administration has continued to not act in good faith and acted with no urgency to resolve the wrongful dismissal of Dean Gupta that happened under their watch. They would rather have Michigan State face another costly lawsuit and embarrassment. Unfortunately, the Borough College of Business students and faculty are the ones who are being damaged the most by the wrongful dismissal of their dean. The Borough School of Alumni Giving is running behind plan by $40 to $50 million as alumni have put donations on hold until they see a fair resolution. Michigan State and the business school now have a lawsuit due to the lack of leadership oversight of a professor's class syllabus that affected students both monetarily and morally. And the Borough professors are concerned that all the positive momentum that had been building up for the last several years at the Borough School has come to a halt. It is time for the Board of Trustees of Michigan State to fulfill their fiduciary duties and reinstate Dean Gupta. It is what is in the best interest of Michigan State University and the business school students and faculty, and widely supported by the Borough College alumni. Go Green.
Thank you very much, Alec. That Interim President Woodruff concludes this morning's portion of the items not germane to the agenda.
Thank you very much. We'll now turn to the liaison's reports, chairperson report, and trustees' comments.
You will now hear the student liaison report.
Hi, everyone. I am sorry I am unable to attend today. I am currently studying abroad, and with there being no virtual option for me for today's meeting, Vice President for Academic Affairs, Alisa Hakim, is reading this report on my behalf. But for those of you who do not know me, my name is Emily Huyampa, and I was recently elected and began my term as the ASMSU and undergraduate student body president. To reference the agenda, the new era of health and wellness at MSU enters upon the approval of the newly renovated pool and new rec center. ASMSU is excited to further engage in these conversations as the building commences soon. As time goes on, we look forward to the transparency, accountability, and collaboration that will take place between all members of the MSU community. But to officially start up my time as the student liaison, here are my beginning thoughts and updates to this board. To start off, we are grateful the university has officially decided to pursue a permanent memorial with the Spartan Strong Funds. My hope for this memorial, along with the bench that we passed in the 59th session with Bill 59-100, is that students, faculty, staff, and those impacted by the events of February 13th are able to come together to both support and help one another heal, remember, and give justice to Ariel Anderson, Brian Frazier, and Alexandria Werner. Ariel, Brian, and Alex did not deserve what happened to them, and it is vital that they are remembered for more than just their names or moments of silence, but for the impact they had on the Spartan community. With that being said, Michigan State is still very much a campus in pain that needs healing, and it is crucial that all voices in the Spartan community are heard when this memorial is being planned and executed. As these conversations continue, I truly hope and will continue to advocate for students, faculty, staff, and everyone impacted by the events of February 13th to have a say in how to honor those who are lost and keep in mind those who are still struggling. February 13th affected everyone in different ways, and in order for this memorial to be reflective of the people it impacted, those who are planning the memorial should have a wide range of perspectives and opinions. With that being said, I hope to have the opportunity to continue these conversations to allow our community to heal, and I hope the board feels the same. Throughout my term, I hope this board continuously pushes transparency and accountability and a greater willingness to hear from students at Michigan State in which you serve. Accordingly, I hope my term continues talks in the passing of the introduction of CORS and COPS liaison seat to the board. No advocacy venture can be completed in one day, but increased student representation on the board has been sought out for numerous years, particularly the representation of CORS and COPS groups. With the student liaison's representatives policy not having any revisions since 1985, now is the time to look at it and evaluate what can be done better. The university has gone through many changes and will continue to change, yet this policy has not been updated to better represent MSU's most important stakeholders, the students. This board's commitment to the MSU 2030 DEI strategic plan makes me hopeful that the CORS and COPS liaison seat will be passed in a timely manner. Furthermore, the student liaisons to the board should also have seats on the board committees. There is so much power in student voices and representations, and this addition will greatly improve transparency, accountability, and the board's relationship with students. As an additional follow-up from the April board meeting, I am extremely disappointed that the 6,000 NASSER documents have yet to be released. Withholding these documents shows a lack of genuine care for survivors, opposing the principles MSU supposedly stands for. The fact that survivors have been calling for the release of these documents and they have been greeted by silence from MSU and the board is simply proving the narrative that the board and the university does not listen to survivors unless it benefits them. If MSU and this board claims that they are going to learn and do better, I implore you to please take action now. Release the documents and give the survivors on this campus a tool to help with their healing journey. My experience as MSU student body president has been limited but impactful nonetheless. Being in any leadership role is difficult, and for those who take them on, it is no small feat. Yet what's important in these roles is both taking accountability for one's work and their personal actions, as well as how they can be perceived, but also being vulnerable about how challenging the job can get. It's important for all of us as leaders of this great school and the place that many of us call home to continue to hold ourselves to a high standard with the work that we are doing, while simultaneously owning up to our mistakes. We work for the entire MSU community, putting an effort to do better every single day. Thank you for your time, and I look forward to continuing these conversations in the future. Go Green.
Go White.
To all of the Board of Trustee members, good morning. I'm here today alongside the Graduate Employee Union members to bring an issue to your attention that has greatly troubled us. On Thursday, June 8th at 5:26 p.m., me and the President of the Associated Students of Michigan State University received an email from Vice President Benny Gore. The email informed us that, quote, we are asking the Board of Trustees to approve an additional $80 per year to additional $80, quote, we are asking the Board of Trustees to approve an additional $80 per year to build the pool as part of the Student Recreational and Wellness Center project. This would bring the total cost to students to $340 per year. We would adjust financial aid for our most needy students to cover the change. Thank you for your continued support, unquote. I am grateful to VP Gore for informing us about the proposed fee increase, for answering any questions that I had about the fee on request, and for reaching out to other campus constituencies to obtain answers to our most pressing questions, such as, will pay increases commensurate with the proposed fee increases? How would financial aid adjustments be made? And what will happen if a student can't pay their fee because their paycheck hasn't come in yet? All of these are relevant questions. This is an excellent example of the kind of transparency that we have been calling for. This is an excellent example of the kind of transparency that we have been calling for over the past year, and I hope it will continue. Armed with the answers provided by VP Gore, I designed a survey intended to gauge the attitude that current, graduate, and professional students would have to the proposed fee increase. In the survey, I provided a full explanation of VP Gore's responses to my questions, followed by questions about whether they would support the fee increase, whether the student lives or works off campus, and how they believe their perception of the MSU Board of Trustees and MSU in general would change if the board approved the fee increase. I emailed the survey to our constituents on Tuesday afternoon, and here are their responses. We collected a total of 322 responses. Out of those, 172 of them were confirmed to be a unique response from an MSU graduate or professional student. 129 of those students work on campus but live off campus. 37 work and live off campus, and 5 work and live on campus. Of those students, 90.2% said they did not support the $100 increase to their yearly recreational and wellness center fee. Only 7 people said that they would support more than a 25% increase to our current fees. And 75.5% of the responders said that they did not want the fee to increase at all. By contrast, the Graduate Employee Union ratified during their last calendar year that they support the complete elimination of the fees. I know that many graduate and professional students would agree that this should happen. Lastly, a total of 83.7% of the respondents told us that if the fee increase was passed in its current form, that their perception of MSU would be negatively impacted. 83.7%. The graduate and professional students have never asked for this fee to be imposed on them. With inflation causing us to make hard financial choices daily, we have had enough. We are calling on the Board of Trustees, if they have not already considered it and done so, to heed the voices of the graduate and professional students of Michigan State University and provide them with proper compensation or the option to opt out of these unfairly imposed, mandatory, and non-refundable fees. These fees are not a new issue. No referendum was proposed to inform graduate students or gauge their response to the proposed fees. Every year since they've been imposed, the Graduate Employee Union has had to remind MSU administration that teaching assistants cannot be forced to pay the recreational and wellness center fee. Even though the GEU contract forbids teaching assistants from being forced to pay the fee, dozens of teaching assistants are still charged the fee accidentally every year. Since we have had a hard time getting graduate student voices to be heard in this situation, I will now provide a few anecdotes that graduate students asked me to share with you about their opinion of the fees. Quote, graduate students are the backbone of research at this university. The demands placed on us on a daily basis are enormous, and without our constant work, the university would crumble. It's extremely frustrating that administrators do not realize how limited graduate student budgets already are. An extra $100 taken from the pockets of graduate students might make the difference between getting to see family once a year or not, or being able to afford rent or repairs or dental insurance or food. And I can also attest to the fact that I recently had to have a procedure and I was worried that I would not be able to afford the $118 that it would require to get my tooth filled. Please consider raising these funds somewhere else instead of putting a heavier burden on the most overworked and undervalued population on campus. End quote. Quote, these unnecessary and unfair fees decrease the likelihood that professional students will donate to MSU after graduation. Unquote. Quote, the increased fee should be directly collected from students who use the facilities through some other scheme, as there may be some graduate students who do not use the facilities at all, in which case it would be unfair, unquote. Quote, while I do not necessarily mind an increase in fees, it is frustrating that I will not likely see a benefit from that increase, as I will have graduated. Mind you, the recreational facility will be finished in 2026. So some students that are now paying for this facility will never be able to use it. Additionally, students who do not live in or around the Lansing area or who are not in the Lansing area to go to school, like those in clinical rotations in a different city, like this one, or an MSU satellite campus without a recreational facility should not have to pay the fees, unquote. Quote, fees cannot be increased if pay is not increased proportionately, i.e., indexed to inflation. International students are already having trouble securing places to stay because of the raising prices without fees being increased, unquote. Quote, as someone who has courses in the Metro Detroit area, comm student, this rec fee provides me with zero benefit and is only another way my tuition is bloated. How do I opt out, understanding that I would forfeit my recreation opportunities, which are too far away for me to use anyway? Unquote. If they raise our pay, then maybe I can support a slight increase in recreational fees. Unquote. And finally, quote, I grew up near MSU and have been going to the IM sports facilities for a long time. I'm not going to lie, I almost committed to Princeton right when I saw their gym. Today, as a current PhD student in the physics department, I go to IM East and West to work out, go for a swim, or play basketball with a few buds at IM Circle. And I know many people who use these facilities. Students doing their PhDs in STEM at MSU have all tuition aspects waived by their department. So the departments are the ones heading this cost. I am more than happy that this fee is being paid this way by these departments because I want MSU to have athletics facilities that compete with other schools in the nation, not some gym that's stuck from the 80s. I think that the increase is fine for grad students and departments where their tuition and fees are basically paid by the department because they're not paying for this IM fee out of pocket. However, grad students not in these departments should be barred from paying this fee out of pocket, unquote. The graduate professional students that we have surveyed have spoken. I would be more than happy to provide the rest of their responses, all 169 of them. Some of them support the fee. However, most of the respondents are calling for the following. No fees for students who will never be able to make use of these facilities and or tuition increases to compensate for losses to their salaries that they did not ask for. I would personally also encourage MSU to hold a formal referendum to ask the students whether they would support the proposed fee increase. This would provide the opportunity for the administration to have constructive conversations with our students and in doing so, win the support of the graduate and professional students of MSU. By having these conversations, the board will have secured the future of the recreational and wellness facilities in a way that an imposed fee will never be able to achieve. Please always take some time to consider the graduate and professional student perspective in full before making a decision to approve fee increases. In addition, please help us find a way to alleviate the financial pain of our graduate and professional students now that this action has been taken. Thank you, and I would like to yield my time to the graduate employee union representatives if they have something else they would like to say.
Hello, my name is Milor Sertanovic. I'm the Vice President of Contract Negotiation and Enforcement for the GEU. The Graduate Employees Union stands in solidarity with COGS. We know that grad students do not want to pay any mandatory non-refundable fees, Every year, dozens of TAs contact us when MSU tries to charge them the rec fee in direct violation of the collaborative bargaining agreement. And last November, our membership voted to ratify a plank to keep MSU financially accountable when this occurs. Moreover, MSU's proposed increase to the fee would almost double it from one year to the next, a leap far greater than the 6% raise to the minimum stipend that the GEU won for all grad students going into effect this fall, a raise that still falls short of meeting recent inflation. So let students choose to pay for recreational facilities if they want, but do not burden them, and please do not vote to raise the existing fee without giving grad students a choice. Thank you.
I would also like to say that COGS, as a general rule, stands with survivors. Go Green.
Thank you. We will now hear the faculty liaison report.
Good morning. I believe it's still morning. Good morning. Happy Pride Month and happy Juneteenth. This has been an eventful year for the university. We welcomed two new trustees and a new chairperson. Additionally, the Quinn Emanuel report was released, although we are still awaiting the final cost assessment of that exercise. Moreover, we were deeply saddened by the tragic and inexplicable mass shooting on February 13th. Vice President Lynch has been proactive in addressing inquiries regarding campus security upgrades, and we urge him and his office to maintain frequent and clear communication with the MSU community. The search for a new president is currently underway. Although the University Council proposal for faculty inclusion on the search committee was not accepted, we do believe that the faculty representation included will be an engaged group. Recognizing that this is a closed search, we continue to propose exploring ways of opening the search as much as possible while keeping final candidate identities confidential. Engaging in such an open-ish process would engender goodwill and prevent the ill will of introducing a surprise, ta-da, president. We encourage the MSU community to share their comments, questions, and concerns through the dedicated President Search email address. That is presidentialsearch, all one word, at msu.edu. We thank the board for taking steps towards professional development. The resolution we passed regarding this matter is being implemented, and we anticipate tangible outcomes from the short and long-term board training activities. MSU employees are deeply committed to excellence in all aspects of their work, and we commend them for their outstanding dedication to the university's mission. We expect the same level of commitment from the Board of Trustees. The University Committee on Faculty Affairs has provided a clear, thoughtful, and evidence-based rationale for the faculty raise, with recruitment, retention, and equity as key considerations. Fair and equitable compensation is imperative for all MSU employees who contribute significantly to our esteemed institution. Providing fair compensation aligns with our strategic goals across various domains. Budgets are not just financial documents. Budgets are moral documents. Therefore, if we are truly invested in attracting and retaining the best talent and fostering a thriving and successful workforce, it is ethically and morally imperative to ensure fair compensation. This is the path toward sustained excellence. We do believe that the passage of this budget on this day signifies that compensation is indeed a priority for the board and for executive administration. Lastly, both Dr. Anthony and I will conclude our terms on August 16th. Dr. Jack Lipton has been elected as the new chairperson, and Dr. Rebecca Malwin has been elected as the new vice chairperson of the Faculty Senate and University Steering Committee. Congratulations, Jack, and congratulations to Rebecca. We have high expectations for the transition in academic governance leadership. Academic governance is a verb. It is the process by which the people affected by decisions get to participate in the making of the decisions. It is important work that we take seriously, and we embrace the opportunity to work in partnership on the challenging yet necessary tasks ahead. Thank you.
Thank you, students. Thank you, faculty. I do want to remind us that we have an opportunity to comment on items germane to the board, and so I think most people know that I'm very interested in hearing what folks have to say, particularly students, and so I would welcome you to sign up for comments, particularly GEU, in the months to come as you see fit. Thank you for lifting your voices. So, Grand Rapids, we are here because of one trustee who is from the West Side. I'm also from the West Side, but not like this one. Trustee Scott is a diehard West Sider, and she has been pushing us and pulling us and dragging us all the way to make sure that we come to the West Side. And we have been treated so awesomely with the hospitality that that exceeded our expectations. We thank you so much for your recommendation to come here for our board retreat. And I want to thank everyone who made it possible. Like, even seeing East Lansing here today, I mean, you all are troopers. You make the trek with us. Thank you so much for providing a service all the way over here on the West Side. Thank you so much. The retreat has been really rewarding. I want to again thank Dr. Anthony and Dr. Kelly Blake for your leadership in charging the board to retreat and to develop ourselves and develop our board. And we've gone above and beyond what you asked because it's been rewarding and enriching. We've learned a lot about one another these last couple of days, and learned a lot about the board and how to function to our best capacity for the advocacy and the accountability of the university, which is all of everyone sitting here. It's our aim to advance this university, right? So this has been really, really good, and I like these people, and I like them even more after this short time in Grand Rapids. Our other focus for this retreat was to discuss the current efforts being carried out by the university to advance the strategic plan of 2030. The strategic plans, as you all know, strategic plans can look awesome on paper and can sit on a shelf. And this university did a lot of work to develop that strategic plan, and the board has been really committed to making sure that it's a living, breathing document and not something that just goes on the shelf and collects dust. And so accountability to that plan was brought out during our conversations today, and we're impressed by the work being done across units in the university. We want to see positive, significant impacts, and we have, and outcomes, and we're dedicated to carrying out the goals that are collective in terms of moving this university forward. One of the outcomes that was highlighted by Interim President Woodruff in her remarks today pertaining to the outstanding national rankings of MSU graduate programs needs recognition, right? We need to tell our own story of how awesome we are and how great we're doing in our graduate programming. It's impressive to see, and I think I talked about this before, supply chain. We've talked about African history, like the wide range of MSU as a land-grant institution has, in being the expert and the leader in so many diverse ways, to me is, again, something that we should be touting and aligned with our strategic plan. Student success, faculty success, staff success, very important components of our strategic plan, and we are expanding not only the range but the quality of our programming here at MSU based on the strategic plan. I was really heartened by that, the reports by different units. Another key initiative promoting the advancement of our strategic plan is MSU's investment in Detroit. I am a Detroiter, if you're from Detroit, people know that you're from Detroit. Right? I live in Detroit. There's a big difference. There's a big, big difference. But I live in Detroit, and I am invested in Detroit. And I've been, again, encouraged by this university being a land-grant state university, right? It's to cover the whole state, and we do. And this commitment to Detroit from MSU can be seen in the Fisher Building that you talked about today, but then also in our partnership with Health Sciences and Henry Ford Health. I am so excited to sit on that board. And the last meeting, we approved the construction of a new state-of-the-art research facility that will expand research in cancer and health disparities. This partnership is representative of MSU's commitment to addressing inequities in health. Is everything okay? Okay, and will provide health high-quality services to medically underserved communities in the Detroit area. Apart from the research facility, this partnership assists in forming an innovation district in Detroit that will connect community, industry, and academia, as well as boost economic growth and opportunity in the area. I'm so proud of these initiatives and the impact that we'll have on the lives of Detroiters. In the Mackinac Policy Conference, the board asked for a greater participation. What did he say yesterday? Dr. Chua said sparticipation. Mm-hmm. That was the word that he used.
Yep,
sparticipation at Mackinac. I like that word. I'm going to use it from now on. But we were able to, and I want to thank Kathy Wilbur and her team for getting us there and organizing us and having things for us to do and for us to make connections and be the advocates and the assets that you trust us to be for MSU. I thank you for your organization and your leadership. And we also were able to have a panel this year, which, again, based on our increased participation, we had a greater visibility. And I wanted to have Norm, Dr. Beauchamp, just talk about that panel. You would know better what to say than I would.
Oh, thank you.
Sorry. But not so sorry.
One of the really important things about the tragic events of February 13th is what is Michigan State going to do to create a different future? As Karen Kelly Blake has talked to us about, thoughts and prayers, they're important, but they're not enough. So one of the wonderful works that has come out of the two of the health colleges was attaining a grant, and it's called Prevention to Protect. And what this grant does is it's a $15 million grant that allows us to put systems in place across our high schools and our middle schools to be able to early detect and early intervene with individual students that are struggling. And no single school has the resources to do this. But if we bring together regions across the state, we will be able to make a difference. And what was really inspirational about this is it started with a mother from Sandy Hook. And she talked about the tragedies of losing her daughter. But then she also talked about this little boy who was lost, who grew up to be the individual who was the shooter. And in this effort, they've looked at 300 averted events, and they've said, let's learn from those so we can detect and prevent. And what was wonderful in having the trustees involved in this and at the policy conference is this is something that can be scaled. And we were very thankful that we got that $15 million in support. And ultimately, we see by setting up this center, will be able to connect other strengths across the university. So it really sets a foundation. Really thankful, and thank you for your presentation, Trustee Tebay, and the support of everyone in advancing this.
This is a timely conversation we should all be having. I'm grateful that MSU is leading this national discussion and this important work. Thank you for your work on this and your passion. Beyond the panel, I was just elated to be around so many Spartans who have passion for this university, a commitment to this university, and contribute to making a positive impact in Michigan, but also globally. I'm also heartened by Mr. Garza. I really do like advocacy, and you have been persistent. I don't know why you introduced yourself. we all know who you are. But I was really, really heartened by the budget, and I'm glad that we had an expected end. I do want to also echo what Dr. Karen Kelly Blake said about this budget. Every budget is really indicative of your values and your morals. And so I wanted to make sure that I say that we value you, all of the folks who make MSU run, and also that budgets have a little bit of fluidity within it. And so we heard you as well, graduate students. And so I want to also just thank the staff, particularly at the Hannah Building. I was there late one night, which is not typical. I try to beat the traffic home. But I was there late, and I was able to speak to a supervisor who talked about what he's going through in terms of retention, in terms of attracting employees, and how you pay folks, how you show up for them in terms of how they're able to make a living for themselves, actually makes a difference in how they do their work, and how they feel about their work, and then also the treatment that you receive. And we had a conversation because he's kind of a little OCD like me, like he's cleaning everything. And I was so appreciative. So we had a long conversation. There are real challenges in the workforce right now, and so I want to be part of the solution. The board wants to be part of the solution in making sure that MSU feels valued, and that we're retaining great people who are doing hard work. So thank you for your, I don't know if I can see you, Joe. Okay, oh, there you are. Thank you for your advocacy. And then finally, this is Pride Month, and this is also the month that we celebrate Juneteenth. And I will, along with Interim President Woodruff, be at Breslin this afternoon for the third annual celebration. I'm really grateful that we are taking that day off as a national holiday and that we are celebrating Juneteenth. It is the oldest holiday that commemorates the emancipation of enslaved black folks in this country, so we do need to remember and celebrate that day. I also want to say that along with the Pride Month, we just have to be mindful that what we had that day was a declaration of emancipation. What we are still striving for is a realization of that emancipation. That work is not done. We still have a long road toward freedom, and these interlocking oppressions, right? Black folks are afflicted with LGBTQIA discrimination, with health disparities, right, with literacy implications, right? There are all kinds of intersectionalities that we here at MSU, Dr. Vega kind of had that sheet up there, that we here at MSU can make a difference in changing for the better for black folks to actually experience emancipation. And I really am excited. Always I'm grateful to be in this role, but I'm excited about the intentionality and the thoughtfulness and the courage to do work that addresses inequities that folks who are minoritized experience. So as we celebrate Juneteenth, I want us all to remember that we play a role in either dismantling or recreating and reproducing harm. And so you have to make a choice every day to use your skills and talents for good or to decide to do nothing, which is always then going to perpetuate harm. The diversity of this board, the diversity of MSU Spartans, means that we can use our time, our talent, and we learned yesterday in that simulation, or was it Wednesday? I don't remember the simulation. You got to play your position, right? If you're on the oxygen, you got to keep pumping, right? Do what you do best to make sure that everyone else is free. And I appreciate you. Happy Juneteenth. Happy Pride Month. Go green. Sorry about that.
Thank you, Chair Bassett. Thank you. We'll now proceed with trustee comments, starting with Vice Chair Kelly.
Thank you. First of all, I want to echo the comments with regard to Grand Rapids. It's been a very productive retreat for the board. Everybody here, the West Side Spartans, have been very accommodating. The accommodations were nice. The dinner was nice. And we found a little cigar bar that was pretty nice, too. But anyway, so I want to appreciate and thank everybody, including Brianna, for that. Consistent with really a lot of what we've been talking about today, including the passage of the budget, was the investment MSU is making in our faculty, and I hope it's all recognized. So I have a couple of points to make with regard to that. First, MSU combined 11 departments to create the new University Health and Wellness, Health and Wellbeing Division. The new structure will provide more effective administrative support and a coordinated approach to health and well-being. Next, to amplify the recognition of our esteemed faculty and staff, MSU hired two honorific coordinators to identify and encourage nominations and support units throughout the nomination process for prestigious awards in their respective areas of expertise. Finally, as previously announced, MSU has invested over $36 million in base funding for faculty and academic staff salary and benefit increases in fiscal year 2023 and $5 million in strategic retention. We value our faculty and are living our commitment to their success through strategic investments. With regard to specific faculty, which is always fun for me, the board thanks all of our faculty for a successful completion of the academic year. We wanted to express our appreciation for the incredible work from our faculty and makes an impactful educators both in the in and outside the classroom while making discoveries and contributing to the and impacting society locally, nationally, and globally. Work like Amen Yadav, Professor of Educational Psychology and Technology. Yadav leads the implementation of the first year of the CT4EDU program, a National Science Foundation-funded educational program focused on bringing computational thinking into the current elementary curriculum. Only in its first year, there are already 20 elementary schools in Kentwood Public Schools that have implemented it. Additionally, I want to congratulate Yasan Ghanin for receiving the MSU Extension Innovative Technology Award. Ghanin is an assistant professor and extension specialist in the Department of Biosystems and Agricultural Engineering. He uses his innovative drainage designs and technologies to teach drainage design for crop production and water quality protection. Recently, College of Human Medicine professor Andre Bachman and two Corwell Health physicians have been named the 2023 Innovators of the Year for their discovery of an unknown disease and its effective treatment. I'm glad they didn't put in the name of the disease. I'm sure it's complicated. Right, yeah. Their work... Okay. Their work helped diagnose an unknown syndrome in a three-year-old receiving care at the Helen DeVos Children's Hospital. They received the award on May 10th for the... from the New York Intellectual Property Law Association. Finally, last month, Bruce Wolf, Assistant Dean for the MSU College of Osteopathic Medicine Macomb University Center site and Associate Professor of the Department of Radiology within the college, was named the recipient of the 2023 Walter Patenji Medal of Public Service, the highest honor for MSU's College of Osteopathic Medicine. And that concludes. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you, Trustee Kelly. Trustee Byram.
Thank you. I want to reflect just a little bit about our time here in Grand Rapids. Now, the board did participate in a simulation. I had real doubts going into it. It was a cardiac arrest patient, and this was largely a board group. But I want you to know that we played our roles, and our patient survived. So that was the good news there.
Yes.
But what really struck me with interacting with the students was not only the quality of the students and their passion, but it was a real awareness that we are educating future doctors that will be in Michigan. These are largely the students I interacted with, because I asked them all, where's your hometown? And they're Michigan kids for the most part. And we know that the students we
educate, whether it's College of Human Medicine or Osteopathic Medicine or engineering for that matter, they stay in our state, and that's part of our whole land-grant mission. So I wanted to share that. And also Dr. Mary Finn, who is finally retiring. I wish her the best because she tried to retire, I think it was two and a half years ago. And because of her love for MSU, she stayed on to give stability to the College of Social Science when her family moved south. And so I really appreciated her love of MSU to stay on for 2 years, and I wish her nothing but the absolute best in her retirement. And then Rebecca Campbell and Andrea Mumford, for all of the years, they showed leadership at a time that Michigan State really needed leadership in RBSM, trauma-informed decisions, and they interacted with the board on multiple occasions, and they were a true asset, so I thank them for their work. And then Dr. Karen Kelly Blake, thank you for your service. It's been my pleasure to get to know you a little bit better, and I really appreciate your service. So we talked about the strategic plan. We're living the our values of the strategic plan and the budget, and many of my colleagues have talked about that. I want to just briefly touch on sustainability. Michigan State has moved up in the rankings in sustainability, so we moved up 7 spots. So we are 26th internationally, 2nd nationally. We are the only college in Michigan to rank in the top 30 and the only college in the Big Ten to rank in the top 30 spots. So, and that speaks to our land-grant values. We have made announcements and investments in expanding our electric vehicle fleet to 370, I think, is the number over the next decade. And then we have 12 electric vehicle scholars, Spartans, that in partnership with MEDC that will qualify for up to $10,000 in a grant. And they also have internships and co-op opportunities. So those are just some examples of how we are living our sustainability pillar within our strategic plan. So with that, this will conclude my comments today. Thank you.
Thank you, Trustee Byram. Trustee Denno.
Thank you. I want to thank everyone here in Grand Rapids for being so welcoming. I want to thank Trustee Scott for pulling us down here. Great idea. I've always respected this community for your philanthropy. And I also appreciate you welcoming Michigan State into your community. I want to again thank everyone from law enforcement who's here for everything you do for our community. I just want to very, very quickly explain why I abstained on the wellness center. We as trustees had the option, 4 different options presented to us, and we picked the smallest or lowest cost one, and I'm just kind of frustrated with that in the sense of I think Michigan State University students deserve better. I think we can do better. This administration always finds funding for their pet projects, and I just kind of wish we could take a step back and see if we could find funding on this. I'm also frustrated that we've gone to the former swim and dive team and their supporters and asked them for approximately $26 million to fund this. And Hannah, I hear your frustration too and your college's frustration too. So that was why I abstained on that vote. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Trustee Denno. Trustee Kanaki Jefferson.
So I will join the chorus of thanks to the Grand Rapids community. As a trustee, this is the second time I've come out as a trustee in that capacity, and it's amazing in the 3 years or so I've been on the board to see additional changes and things outgrowing and improving. And I also have a takeaway from the simulation. I now know what to do with the defibrillators that we see everywhere in the malls and the stores and on the airplanes. I hope I never have to actually use it, but it was a really impactful opportunity both to actually learn and see what it is like to be a student, to meet the students, and also have that turn into a team building opportunity for us as well. So, and I will also say thank you to Kathy Wilbur and her whole government relations team for the effort on the Mackinac Policy Conference. It was just their extensive work in helping us make connections. It was very evident to me that they had been thoughtful and how we as Michigan State helped to contribute to the theme there, which was a theme of about and bringing together partners to have conversations across the state. That's what we do best, I think. And so, and this was another opportunity, of course, being here in Grand Rapids. I also want to comment on the strategic plan. It's part of part of my contribution to those talking points is to share yet another aspect of our strategic plan that we discussed and considered and really are measuring and assessing. It was something that was very important to the Board of Trustees when we were a part of the strategic plan process, and one of the things that was really important to us was a way to measure how we're doing along the way. And you've heard from my colleagues already, concrete, tangible items that we can look to. It's not just a plan that sits on the shelf, but we can actually start checking boxes. And I'll add to that very long list you've already heard with respect to our strategic plan on diversity, equity, and inclusion efforts, and just mention a couple of really key initiatives that happened in the past year. One is the revised religious observance policy, which is an important step toward improving student and employee experience. This policy provides accommodations for students who miss classes for religious days and provides employees with 2 observance days as personal time that they can use flexibly based on their own desire. And I'm really pleased to say that this policy change was initiated due to a recommendation from a diverse committee consisting of MSU students and faculty and staff in an effort to increase inclusivity on campus. And then additionally, something I think we all well know, right after April's board meeting, MSU broke ground on a very much anticipated freestanding multicultural center. It's a $38 million building. It's set to open in fall of 2024. And is one of the university's strongest commitments to fostering an environment that encourages intellectual curiosity through learning and sharing experiences. And then I know you think I'm going to conclude my remarks with this shout-out because I used to be on the law faculty, but I promise that's not true. It's because you can't ignore the fact that our law faculty has been all over the headlines this week in very different ways. And if you did not hear the 10-minute piece on National Public Radio about Professor Justin Simard's work, he works with a team of students and researchers to end the reliance by judges and courts on legal decisions that involve enslaved people. He believes that that is not a proper basis for decisions going forward. And so if you did not hear that, you should listen to it. And then yesterday, two professors on the law faculty have been heavily involved in a case that was won at the U.S. Supreme Court. Kate Fort and Winona Single were representing tribes that had intervened in a decision that you might have heard about yesterday where the Supreme Court upheld the Indian Child Welfare Act. It's extraordinary to even have a case end up at the Supreme Court. Thousands of people petitioned the U.S. Supreme Court. Less than 100 cases ever make it there. Even more extraordinary to have such an important case and the decision come down the way that it did and to have our faculty behind it. I wasn't surprised, but really exciting to see more examples of the scholarship of this faculty that has real-world impact.
Thank you, Trustee Kanaki Jefferson. Trustee Tebay.
I have a lot of talking points, but I'm unfortunately not going to bring it because it's afternoon, and I'm sure all of us would like to go home at this point. So, but I do not want to not read names of students that have been identified for me to read because there's some pretty remarkable things that they're all doing. So I apologize. I didn't get phonetic spelling on mine like Dan did, so I'm going to do my best with some of these names. But I want to congratulate Ruby Mendoza. She's a PhD. They're a PhD candidate in the Department of Writing, Rhetoric, and American Culture for winning a national award in recognition of their remarkable work in the field of queer theory. They are one of 2 recipients nationwide to receive the 2023 Gloria Anzadul Rhetorician Award. Mendoza's work focuses on the application of and liberation for Black, Indigenous, and people of color communities. Roxy Sproul was named the 13th Udall Scholar to be named from MSU. The Udall Foundation awards scholarships to college sophomores and juniors who demonstrate leadership skills, public service, and dedication to matters pertaining to Native Americans, nations, or the environment. Sproul is an honors college student majoring in social work with minors in race and ethnicity of the U.S., as well as American Indian and Indigenous studies. Abby Struble was named Emerging Leader Institute Scholar by the American Academy of Family
Physicians Foundation. Struble is a second-year student in the MSU's College of Osteopathic Medicine and is one of 30 medical students and family medicine resident physicians to be selected nationwide. Throughout the upcoming year, Struble will be assigned a track where she will interact with family medicine physicians and acquire valuable experience in her career. Aaron Zinda, a doctoral student in the Department of Kinesiology, is the recipient of the American Kinesiology Association's National Doctoral Scholar Award. Since 2014, the award has been annually recognized the top doctoral kinesiology student in the nation by way of leadership and academic record. And Jay Kozar Lewis, a first-year student majoring in supply chain management, has been named a 2023-2024 Newman Civic Fellow by Campus Compact. The fellowship recognizes and supports community-committed students proactively working to make positive changes to social, political, and environmental issues affecting communities. And lastly, Andrew Hendren, a finance and psychology double major, is a 2023 winner of the James D. Standish Award. The award is presented each year to an outstanding Evans Scholar. So I just want to congratulate a few of our amazing students that we have here at MSU.
Thank you, Trustee Tebay. Trustee Scott, you were covering Trustee Pierce's remarks as well.
That is correct.
Thank you.
I'm Trustee Pierce, and she lives a fabulous life, so this is awesome for me. All right, so she sends her regrets that she's not able to give her own comments today. She will be back, though. For university advancement, she would like to give special recognition to Kim Tobin, Vice President of University Advancement, and the entire advancement team for their continued and fruitful fundraising efforts that contribute to the strategic goals and the success of our students, faculty, and staff. University Advancement continues to see growth in the numbers of our MSU donors and has achieved a 25% increase for first-time donors this year. Yay! Donors continue to have confidence in the future of MSU as evidenced by strong year and long-term commitments made via estate gifts. University Advancement also has exceeded their planned gift-giving goal by over 40%. The ACPA president, she wants to give a shout-out to Heather Shea, director of the Women's Student Services in MSU's Division of Student Life and Engagement, who assumed the role of the 83rd president of the American College Personnel Association, College Student Educators International in March. Dr. Shea is the first ACPA president from Michigan State University. The association includes, on average, 1,200 private and public institutions represented by 9,500 members ranging from student affairs employees to companies working in the campus marketplace and graduate and undergraduate students to campus administrators. So that was the report for Sandy. All right. And I'm going to be the opposite of Trustee Tebay, who wants to get you guys out of here, because guess what? I always have the longest drive, and today I don't, so I don't care. No, I'm just kidding. I'm kidding. All right. So super ecstatic about being here in Grand Rapids. And before I get started in my comments, I wanted to give a shout-out. I don't know if Joan Secchi is still here. Is Joan here? Did she leave? All right, so she left, but I just wanted to give her a shout-out. This facility is absolutely amazing, and I just wanted to thank her and her husband for the gift so that we could have this remarkable facility. I did want to recognize Trustee Emeritus. Is Dee Cook, who's one of my faves, is she here?
Yeah, I think she's here.
Trustee Emeritus Dee Cook? I don't know. I saw her at some point. If she, oh, she's here. Stand up, Dee Cook. We love you. And David Porteous. I don't know if they're here, but we're in their backyards. This is so exciting that they were able to join us today, so just wanted to recognize them as well. I wanted to just give a shout-out to the unsung hero of a very successful retreat, and that is Stephen Fletcher and Jackie Vandenbosch. We had an amazing, and Mike Zeig. Stand up, Mike Zeig and Jackie and Stephen, wave your hands.
So I'm getting a lot of the credit. I did kind of whine a lot about coming to West Michigan, but the grunt work of the success of this retreat really goes to those behind the scenes, and I just wanted to recognize you both for all of, I'm sure, the tireless work and effort, it was indeed successful. I wanted to also as well acknowledge the I think it's Dean Sosa, Dr. Emery, as well as everyone that worked in the simulation center, all of the faculty, the staff, the students that were part of the simulation. I know that Dr. Beauchamp as well had a lot to do with that. And I'm not going to cry, but I did ask for the box of Kleenex in case I did. So I had a brother who died of a sudden cardiac arrest at age 24 while he was playing basketball, like literally fell out. He was had an 8-pack, very athletic. It was just devastating to my family. And the importance of yesterday for me just to be able to learn what we are to do so that we can have successes like Damar Hamlin and others who are able to survive. That wasn't there for my brother. The people panicked. They didn't know what to do, and he died. And so it was very emotional for me, but also for me, I was very proud to have learned so that I can act appropriately in the event that someone else has someone they love that this happens to. And so, and our person did survive. I mean, I was woo-hoo, and I was getting tired, and I, my teammates, Dan and Diane, they were making sure the person could breathe, and Renee made sure that the AEDs were on, and we were good. Like, I felt so accomplished after that. So thank you all for giving us that opportunity to it was team building, but also in a way to learn, in a way that will hopefully help us in the future. Hopefully we won't be in that situation. If we are, we're going to know what to do. So I wanted to thank you all for that. I wanted to also thank Kathy Wilbur. I had never gone to the Mackinac Policy Conference, and despite the fact that I am in political office, I just don't like politics, and so I did not really think that I would enjoy it or really have fun, and I did. And Kathy, you did, as has already been recognized. You and your team went out of the way to make that a success. I love the swag. I loved seeing my colleague, Dr. Rima, as well as Dr. Beauchamp, as well as our interim president on the stages that they were on, representing Green and White. And it was pretty, I think, something, it was a bragging point for me that most of the speakers there had some kind of connection to MSU. So that was something to be, prideful about. I was very happy. So thank you, Kathy Wilbur and team. I wanted to also give a shout out to another person. Well, maybe he's not unsung, but I don't know if people recognize the behind-the-scenes work that go into being the chair of the Presidential Search Committee. And so I wanted to shout out Dennis Dino, because Dennis, I mean, he has really taken this by the reins and gone above and beyond to actually get to know each of the search committee members, that take the time, make that effort to know what they're looking for. And he has really taken a lot of time outside of that to help us with our prospectus and a lot of the dealings with our presidential search company. What is it called?
I-600.
And so I just wanted to thank you for your leadership, Dennis, in that. And then I wanted to also thank our chair, who also had a lot to do with what we did here in working on ourselves as trustees. And so one of the things that we did was to take some time to learn who we are as individuals. And, you know, I always have known I'm the oddball, but it actually was proven that I am the oddball on this board here. But be that as it is, these strengths that we each have and the purpose for which I feel God has each of us here, because we are yins to yangs, and I think collectively we make each other better and make this university better. And I just want to thank Rima for, and probably Stefan had a lot to do with that too, for the thoughtfulness in having us do that, because I think that the work that our faculty, Senate, and everyone is saying that we need to do really began a little bit ago, but I think it really came to light in what we're learning about ourselves and how to deal with each other and who we each are. And so I appreciate that. So thank you so much for that as well. All right, so then I've got my comments. I told you, I don't have a long drive. So being a West Michigan native, I have enjoyed seeing up close the impact that MSU has in the Grand Rapids area and Muskegon. Here are just a few highlights. This fall, there are 519 students from Kent County planning to become first-year Spartans. That's an increase of 57 students, and recent data released by the state said that MSU is a top destination for Grand Rapids area students. Yay! Nearly 2,400 of students enrolled at MSU are from Kent County alone. That's pretty significant. Grand Rapids is home to one of the greatest and most philanthropic alumni in the country, and that is the West Michigan Spartans, and we also have our Lakeshore Spartans in Muskegon. And in the past year, we have witnessed an astounding number of Grand Rapids alumni who have generously contributed to MSU. This outstanding achievement reflects the deep dedication and commitment that they have to the future success of our university. And with 4 endowed scholarships and outstanding junior award scholarships, the club is responsible for $70,000 in scholarships for students that come from this area in 2022-23 school year. In my hometown of Muskegon, we have 320 current Spartans and counting, or we're going to keep going up, as well as there are 2,641 alum that contribute to the local spending and investing in that community by $10 million in local businesses. And perhaps MSU is most known for our medical presence in West Michigan. MSU is proud to improve care and lead in the healthcare innovations through our remarkable partnerships with health systems like Corewell Health. Our groundbreaking research happening here in the state of our equipment, like our total body PET scanner, the first in national clinical use. But what folks may not know about is the long-standing commitment to partnerships with the community. MSU Extension, who I'm sure all of you are very familiar with, Kent County Agriculture, is the third largest apple-producing county in the United States with research-based information. Addressing student mental health through the three-year $144,000 Steel Case Foundation, that's West Michigan too, MSU Extension conducts a teen mental health first aid program. 42 students at Crossroads Alternative High School in Grand Rapids graduated from the program just last year. And AgBio Research's West Michigan Research and Extension Center, which opened in 2021 in Hart, that's Oceana County, just north of my home in Muskegon, is founded by stakeholders including Peterson's Farms and the Michigan Tree Fruit Commission, which serves tree fruit growers of Oceana, Mason, and Newaygo counties. There's 68 acres of farmland specifically designated to help better understand the soil and microclimate specific to West Central Michigan. West Michigan Research and Extension Center staff focus their efforts on tree fruit, apple, peaches, pears, tart cherries, as we heard about, and sweet cherries, which I love, and asparagus, which I'm sure we all love. Our West Michigan presence is extensive, and our roots in this community run deep. During the trustee tour yesterday, we had an opportunity to tour MSU's medical facilities in Grand Rapids. We also participated in simulation, and that was thanks to Dr. Emery. And is he here now? I was going to have him stand up. And other honorary physicians that we were part of our day. We also had a chance to explore the bridge. And how many people in here are familiar with the bridge? Because it's a pretty amazing facility. Dr. Gage, I know you guys. Of course you do. Well, you got to go because there's also this great golden doodle named Penny that you'll get to meet if you go to the bridge. It is an incubator space for rapid entrepreneurial growth in the region that launched in January of this year, and it currently serves 12 companies in the region with mentorship and assistance with business and marketing plans. So these are our innovators. Special thanks to Kyle McGregor for an excellent visit yesterday and an explanation of all the ways we are fostering a growing startup community in Grand Rapids. I also wanted to highlight MSU's partnership with Bold Advanced Medical Future Banff, which you taught us about yesterday. The space, which we also visited, is located within the Doug Meyer Medical Innovation Building and has some of the world's most advanced precision cancer treatments. The new technology is the first in Michigan and in the country and provides care to patients with fourth and end-stage prostate cancer through total body PET and CT scan, the fastest in the country. And I think that's also in partnership and kind of spearheaded with Doug Meyer, is what we learned yesterday. And in closing, but it's not going to be my closing, it is an honor to have MSU be a part of historical steps towards the advancement and innovation of the medical field. And it's exciting to be able to share my home, my backyard, with colleagues on this board, and an even greater opportunity and pleasure to represent my fellow West Michigan residents on this board. It's been an honor. But I did forget to talk about, we did also a tour of Frederick Meyer Gardens. And it is really an amazing facility. I wish to thank whoever came up with, you know, taking us on the tour. I just had a problem, and this is why I'm bringing it up, and Trustee T-Bay knows I'm about to say this. They, towards the end of our tour, had some maize and blue stuff looking like a marching band as you marched on in. And so, Spartans, we need to think of how we can also contribute to Frederick Meyer Gardens, something that is innovative and I would think speaks to us being a land grant. Perhaps the seed, as Trustee T-Bay talked about, that will sprout out of the ground, some kind of sculpture. But we need to put our heads together, because that was, you know, the end of the tour, and we want people to not leave on a sour note, right? All right. Go green, go white.
Trustee Scott, thank you very much. Interim President Woodruff, that concludes trustee comments.
Thank you very much. Is there a motion to adjourn the meeting?
So moved.
Is there a second?
Second.
All those in favor?
Aye.
The meeting is adjourned.